man that is a wonderful father as well. But today I get to do my favorite thing, and that's to brag on my Heavenly Father. I get to share with you guys what my Heavenly Father has done for me and my family and the ministry that He has called us to as a family as well. So got my clicker here. We are going to just get rolling. This is my family, my husband, Danny, our oldest daughter, Sarah, she's 15. Our son's out running our table. He's 11 years old. And then our youngest, Asher, is 7. And they're all here with me today. And I'm so thankful. And Miss Gail in the back, will you wave? If everyone sees Gail, she is part of Freedom House as well. She is the live-in staff that lives on site full-time. So I'm so glad to have her here, too, as prayer support and whatnot. But I'm going to start off with sharing my personal testimony, where God found me, the roads that I had traveled that had taken me to a pit of darkness, and then the hope of freedom that I found through Jesus Christ. So like I said, born and raised in Sterling, I was one of 6 kids, a middle child. We were raised in the church, Abundant Sterling, Abundant Life Assembly is where we went. From the time I was little till the time I was 18, we were there every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesdays, VBS camps, youth camps. I had all of the head knowledge of Jesus. I knew every Bible story in this book and knew all of the songs. But there was a void in my heart that now I can look back and see that I didn't have a personal relationship with Jesus when the rubber met the road, when I became of age to make those decisions and I turned my back on God and faith and everything that I was raised with and walked away. And there's a verse in here out of the book of John that the devil has come to kill, steal, and destroy. But I'm so glad that that verse doesn't end there. There's not a period. There's not an exclamation mark. There's a comma. Because the end of that verse says, but I have come to give life and to give it abundantly. And so when I was in 10th grade, I started dating this boy that was selling marijuana. And I can stand up here and tell you that that is a gateway drug. Because as soon as I let my guard down, I was raised saying I would never do anything like that. I was a good kid. I graduated with the 4.0 varsity sports teams. People would say when I walked into the room, I was a joy. I would make it brighter because I loved people and I loved life. And soon after letting my guard down and trying marijuana, it wasn't but 6 months later when I tried heroin for the first time and alcohol and got addicted, heavily addicted to pain pills and everything basically under the sun. I became a full drug addict and alcoholic. Within 6 months after graduating, I had started going to college locally at KPC, found out I was pregnant, dropped out of school because I couldn't attend classes because my life was a mess. And this went on, this addiction went on for almost 10 years, about 9.5 years. I had overdosed 5 times in my use of addiction, landing myself in hospitals, the doctors trying to figure out why this seemingly healthy 21-year-old girl was having heart attack symptoms. I would be hooked up to heart monitors for months at a time so that they could try to figure out what was going on, all the while fully in my addiction. My dad flew me out to Phoenix, Arizona when I was 21 to try to get me help in a rehab. It was my first inpatient rehab I went to. 30 days inpatient, graduating there, I moved to Ohio where my grandparents lived, because I didn't want to come back to Sterling because I knew that everything that I knew here was not good. That sobriety lasted about 30 days in Ohio, and then what I found, the same pill that I was buying off the street in Soldotna for $140 a pop was going for $40 on the streets in Ohio. The market was more abundant, much cheaper, and my addiction, I hadn't surrendered to Jesus. I was still living in myself and in my flesh. I met who's now my husband in a factory down there. He was my supervisor, and he is what we call a normie in the recovery world, meaning he knew how to go to a barbecue, and someone's shaking their head, they know what I'm talking about, and have one beer and walk away. I didn't know how to do that. I had to have the full six-pack followed with pills till I passed myself out because I was fully an alcoholic. I believed the enemy's voice that said, you'll always be like this. There's no hope for you. You're too broken. And that just continued the guilt and the shame cycle to fuel my addiction. We moved to Alaska in 06. My addiction was out of control, and I figured if I got back to my family, my mom and dad, prayer warriors, my sister, my oldest sister is my biggest fan. She has prayed me through the pits of hell and back. I figured if I got back to Alaska, that'll fix it. I'll be better. So we sold everything in Ohio, packed up, drove the Alcan up in 06. And what I figured, no matter where I went, there I was. And I tell this all the time to people in early recovery, no matter where you go, you cannot make a geographical change to fix what's going on inside. Because the same person that was looking back at me at the mirror in Ohio was the same woman looking back at me at the mirror in Alaska. And I did not like that person. I got to the point where I hated myself. I hated myself as a wife, as a mother, as a daughter, because of my choices. So 4 years into our marriage, my husband, who's working full-time, trying to be a mom, trying to keep the house together, and I'm in my addiction, I finally decide I'm going to go back to a rehab. We have a local rehab called Serenity House on K Beach, and this was in 2008. Got checked in there, went through the cycle, and when I graduated, I had my sister picking me up at the rehab and taking me to church in Kenai. She would pick me up on Sundays, bring me to Kenai New Life. And I just remember when I would walk in that room, just the peace that would overwhelm me. And I knew that there was something that I was missing out on. So for 9 months, when I graduated Serenity in 08, for 9 months, I was clean and sober. That is the longest time I hadn't drank or drugged in 8 years at that point in my life, straight. But there was a secret that I was hiding. There was something God was asking me to share, and I was not willing to do that. I was saying, Lord, I'll do anything else but that. And there's also a saying, you're only as sick as your secrets. God can't heal what you keep hidden. And when he's gently nudging you, you know, he is a gentleman. He's not forceful. He don't make us do stuff. But he was nudging me, saying, you need to lay this down at the foot of the cross. And I wasn't willing. And so even though I had given him at that point about 90% of my heart, he wants all of our hearts. He wants everything of us and nothing less. And because I wasn't willing to, I went to the store on my 26th birthday and was going to buy myself, I was going to have a birthday beer. This is how I rationalized in my mind. I'm turning 26 years old, I'm going to have one beer. Well, being an addict, I didn't just get a 12-ounce beer. I got a 44-ounce Colt 45. And within 15 minutes of drinking that, I was looking for drugs again after 9 months of being sober. This relapse went on for another 3 months to where me and my husband were going to call it quits because I was a mess. And I had tried and tried, and nothing was working. I show up at my older sister's house, who was watching my kids at the time, in an overdose state, throwing up, not being able to breathe, and she sweeps me up off the porch and brings me to Serenity Intake Office and says, what should I do with her, literally carrying me in? The director of Serenity happened to be standing there and said, Jen, can you be here in the morning with your bags packed? If you can be here at 10, I'm going to get you back inpatient. And I remember leaving that office the most hopeless, drug-addicted, wife, mother, defeated woman that there ever was. Because I had already been to two inpatient rehabs. I had already done counseling and anxiety pills and psychology appointments and doctors. And I had tried to fix this, and nothing worked. So when my husband dropped me off that morning, he didn't know, but I had loaded my pocket with a pocket full of pills. Because the voice of the enemy was louder than anything else that I was listening to. And he was saying, you're too broken. You'll always be like this. Your marriage is done. He's going to take the kids. Your family, at this point, I wasn't allowed to step foot on my parents' property because I had robbed from them to fill my addiction. I wasn't allowed to go over to my sister's house because of my actions and behaviors. I was excommunicated out of all my family's property so that they could keep themselves safe from me. And I remember going in the intake office and taking that handful of pills and chasing it with Crown Royal whiskey because I didn't want to live anymore. But the end of that verse, but I have come to give life and to give it abundantly. Pursued and chased and found me in that rehab. Let me tell you guys, this, our local rehab is not a faith-based rehab. It is very worldly. But I'm so glad that we serve a God that is not limited to walls. He's not limited to church buildings and functions. That even though I went in on June 25th, it was 3 days later that I was in a blackout, that God woke me up on June 28th, 2009. My sobriety birthday is June 26th. That's my no drugs, no alcohol. This month, by the grace of God, I'm going to have 9 years clean and sober. Because we serve a God, yes, that pursues us. We serve a God that forgives us. We serve a God full of mercy and grace, Abba Father, that chases us down. And he chased me down. And at 6 in the morning on the 28th of June, I woke up to a song that I had learned at a VBS camp. And this is a plug. I heard they need VBS helpers, guys. I remember the lady that taught us. I was probably 8 to 10 years old. And it was a Bible verse, but she taught it to us as a song. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. And that verse as a song was going through my mind, and I'm laying in this rehab bed just waking up from a 3-day blackout. And it's louder in the presence of God. I could just feel all around me. And I remember even I got up out of bed and I started pacing that rehab bedroom singing this verse, thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. And my roommate rolls over in her bed, and I still remember her saying, Jen, what are you doing? Go back to bed. And I said, I can't. And I got on my knees and I raised my arms on the 28th of June and I said, Jesus, as hard as I pursued my drugs and alcohol, which was 24/7, I'm going to pursue you with all that I have and with all that I am. And I surrendered that morning to Jesus Christ, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the one that has come to set the captives free, guys. And I was held captive by the lies of the enemy, by the one that has come to kill, steal, and destroy, had me captive. But the power of God breaks every chain of addiction, of self-hatred, of everything that the world tacks onto you that you are and you'll never change. That's the God that I surrendered to that morning. So with that, God has redeemed my family. My husband and I just celebrated our 12th wedding anniversary this year because God is a God that heals, yes. Man, if you're sitting in here struggling in your marriage, don't give up. You keep fighting. The battle belongs to the Lord. And so the position of fight that I'm talking about is on our knees. You every morning get on your knees and fight for your marriage. It is worth saving. It is worth fighting for. I can promise you that. He has restored to where I get to be the mother of my beautiful children. At one point, my mom was raising my kiddos. But God has created me to be the perfect mother for my children, and I get to raise them in the Lord, and they get to be part of what God is doing in our lives. We're going over to my parents' house today for Father's Day. Today's also his birthday. I always thought he got the short end of the stick because his birthday is on Father's Day. So anyways, we're going over there for a barbecue. Me and my mom do prison ministry together. You guys, God has radically transformed and healed the relationships in my family because I surrendered my heart to him. So that brings us, when I got saved, I was excited to share this hope that I found. And living in the state of Alaska, you know, it's not by chance that this is where I was born and raised. And it's not by chance that Alaska ranks number one in almost every bad thing you can think of. Suicide, addiction, domestic violence, all of the diseases, we are number one on the list. And so my heart is for our state. And I have been blessed in these last 8 years to have got to travel around the state of Alaska to villages and to share my hope and my story of freedom and salvation. I can't even count how many people have got on their knees with me and given their hearts to the Lord and watched the chains of addiction be shattered in the last 8 years, and I know that God's just getting started. So I got involved in prison ministry pretty shortly after getting saved. I've got a sister that has been arrested over 25 times, and so I was going into the prisons to visit her a lot, and she would tell me about Bible studies, and my mom got involved in the Bible studies, and then I did. So about 5 years, I was doing Bible study prison ministry at our local Wildwood here in Kenai with the women, and then realized that they needed a chaplain, that our women out there, we have 450 men out there because it's sentence facility for men, but our women, it's just pretrial, and there was 50 to 60 women out there. So the men had a chaplain that could bring Bibles in, that would coordinate retreats, special events, Bible studies, but the women didn't. They were kind of forgotten because they weren't sentenced. And so I approached the state chaplain with this need. Hey, this is what I see we need out here. And long story short, he said, hey, what about you? Do you want to be the chaplain out there? And I still remember that meeting in his office because I am a college dropout. I am one that tried to get my certification for ministry in the state of Alaska and was denied because of certain things in my past. Like, no matter how hard I tried, I could not get a piece of paper to validate who I am and what I can do. Look, I can do this. I got this. That wasn't God's plan for my life. And he said, how about you? Do you want to become the female chaplain? And just so blessed and honored for about a little over two years, became the female chaplain at Wildwood. And it was at one of those Bible studies that a woman approached me at the end of the study, and with tears in her eyes, she says, Jen, I'm getting ready to get out in the morning. This was in February. It was 20 below zero. I'm getting ready to get out in the morning. Do you know anywhere that I can go, anywhere safe that I can go? And I remember looking at her, and she said, Jen, my two options are where I came from, which is a dope dealer's house, or the streets. And I know if I go back there, it's going to be the same old, same old. And I had to look at her in the eye and say, no, we have nowhere for you to go. She said, I'll even sleep in the basement of a church, anywhere. I don't want to die. I want to live. And so this was a reoccurring thing, and it would break my heart, and I would go home and pray, God, we need something for these women. And it was in that prayer and in that time upstairs in my prayer room when God spoke to me, and I was writing in my journal that morning, February 1st, 2016, there's two sentences. Am I supposed to open a women's home? Question mark. And then something completely not even to do with that. And I took that for 2 months. I didn't tell anyone about what I felt the calling on my heart. For 2 months, I just prayed about it. I didn't speak about it because I didn't have the first idea how to start that or how to go about that. But after 2 months, when I revisited it in prayer, Lord, was this from you? It was just as strong as when he gave it to me 2 months ago. So I set up an appointment with five pastors that had been part of my discipleship and that had been pouring into me through my journey of salvation the last 5-6 years. And I made appointments with all five of them. And I went and I visited them and said, this is my vision. This is what I see as a need. This is what I feel God calling me to do. And in the back of my mind, I was hoping that they would say, don't do it. You're crazy. You're not the one for this. But instead, all five of them said, do it. We're behind you. We're going to be praying for you. You are the one for this job. Do it. So I formed a board in June of 2016, that same year. Never been on a board, a nonprofit. Did all of that. Googled questions because I had no idea what I was doing. But the Holy Spirit was leading and guiding. And I started driving around the back streets of Soldotna because I knew it was going to be in Soldotna, but I knew it had to be in the heart of town because the majority of these women getting out of prison and rehabs and coming off the streets aren't going to have vehicles. They're not going to have driver's license. And part of our programming at Freedom House is they have to get a job within 30 days. They have to finish their outpatient treatment. They've got to get plugged into a church on Sunday. We don't tell them what church they have to go to, but they have to go to a church every Sunday. So we knew that there'd be a lot of walking and bike riding, so I knew it had to be centrally located. So for months, I would drive around the back streets of Soldotna just praying, God, show me what home you have for these women. Show me. And when the owner of this building called me and said, Jen, it's The building's for sale. The people that bought it gave it back because they realized how damaged it is. So I'm thinking, well, I don't want to go look at that if they didn't want it. And it was actually PCHS that had bought this building. It's 5,000 square feet. And for 7 years, they paid on this building. It sat empty for 7 years. And then they realized how much money it was going to be to turn it into a transitional living center. And they decided, you know what, it's too much money, too much work. We're going to give it back to the owner, even after they sewed all of that money into it for 7 years. So doing the math now, mind you, at this point, I had been saved for 7 years. God had been shaping and molding and calling me for these last 7 years that this other company had been paying down this building every month. So I went and met the lady over at the building. This is it on Shady Lane, which is right next to the Borough Building in Soldotna. For those of you that don't know where Shady Lane is, it's right next to Vergeen's old dance studio, or Forever Dance used to be there. So I got the city inspector. He scheduled about a 45-minute walk through there with me. And 4.5 hours later, he handed me a stack of paperwork almost as thick as my Bible. And he said, and the whole 4.5 hours, he would say, Jen, how are you going to do this? How are you going to get the money for this? Because we had just formed a board. We had no money, no fundraising, no nothing. How are you going to do this? And I just kept saying, the Lord's going to provide. I have no idea, because I didn't have any idea. But I knew that the Lord was leading. So he handed me those paperworks, and his words were, Jen, I don't believe in the same God that you do, but what you're trying to do here is impossible. And the general contractor, who also happens to be my father, he owns Mercus Builders Construction, did the walkthrough of the home, and he told me even before he walked through, he said, Jen, the word on the street is that this building has to be torn down. It's too damaged, the foundation is too broken, the roof is too rotted, the mold throughout the whole building is too much. Word on the street in the contractor world is that this building, like, you don't want to touch it. But if we do touch it, it's going to cost $459,000 to get the city to allow us to open the doors. $500,000 just in renovations to open the doors of Freedom House. And so you better believe that I was scared, that I thought I'm in way over my head, that I can't do this. You're right, I can't do this, just what he said. And at that time, people were rising up saying, why would you try to open this here? Don't you know that homes like this have opened here in Soldotna and they've closed? That doesn't work here. This community doesn't support homes like this. I remember someone literally laughing at me saying, Jenny, you have all of these good ideas, but you have no money, through laughter. The newspaper would come and do an article, and people would comment on a public post saying, great, this is going to be the next brothel. And even though those rise against, I serve a God that is greater than the enemy's voice of lies. I've learned to recognize which voice is of the enemy and which is from my God. And I was able to stand up and say, I will fear no evil, and I will do what God is calling me to do. And so on December 9th of that year, I signed the papers with $800 in our bank account. The owner would sell us the building for $245,000, which was a smoking deal even as it sat because of the city lot that it sat on, two city lots that we have. And she's a Christian, and she has a loved one in addiction, and when she found out what I wanted to turn it into, she sold it to us with no money down, knowing we had no money in our bank. I mean, this woman also took a leap of faith because she caught the vision and she said, I'm going to help. So it was a $750,000 decision that we made with $800 in the bank account. But when God says go, I want to go. I don't want a second guess, and I don't want 20 years down the road to say, I wonder what would have happened if I said yes. I wonder what would have happened if I would have obeyed. And so our very first work day was the 17th of that year. And it did have a lot of damage, as you'll see through these pictures. This is one volunteer work day. I would just go and start sharing my vision with churches that would allow me in. And people from the church would show up. We would do work days Monday through Friday. We would have people there from 9 in the morning till 5 at night, and people would come in after work, before work. People would bring lunches for the work crews. In this one picture, it's my favorite picture, because in this one picture represents three different pastors of three churches, the chief of the Soldotna Police Department, and a firefighter from our crew, because the community knows that we have a problem. And it brought so much unity together through the body of Christ, as well as unbelievers. People would come that weren't believers, but we know that there's a problem, and then I would get to share a piece of the testimony or what God's doing, and God worked mightily. This is what the kitchen looked like. We would peel out a layer, and this also is the kitchen, and then we'd realize we'd have to go down three more layers because of mold or leaky windows or whatnot. My family was a huge part of the renovations. They were there late at nights, early in the morning, helping clean up or just hang out. Preferred Plumbing and Heating donated a ton of, over $26,000 worth of plumbing, because the city inspector was there every week to sign off on our plumbing and our electrical, and so we had to have professional electricians and plumbers. The living room had graffiti on the walls, as you can see over here is our break room. We would have lunch every day. I'd make everyone quick, come in, eat lunch. We'd pray together. Someone would share a testimony together. This is the bathroom. This was the grossest, worst room. As we were digging down, it was just pretty nasty. Right here's the hallway. Basically, it hadn't been brought up to city code since 1996. So it was 2018 code that we're trying to meet. So the inspector, and he was very clear in the front, like, this can't be done. Like, that hallway needs to be blown out 8 inches. And just to do that, that's $10,000 for one hallway. Every single door frame in a 5,000-square-foot building needed to be blown out. It was like they were like 29-inch doors, and they had to be 34-inch doors. We had to become ADA-friendly. And so this, we're ripping out a wall. You can see the electrical there. That is now my office. This is a bathroom that we put in the upper room there. The prison would bring building 11 of the men. It's a step-down program, meaning they're getting ready to be released back into the community. And so they would bring, I still am on, you know, first-name basis out there at the prison. I'd call up the superintendent and say, hey, we need a crew of 8 guys. We're hanging sheetrock tomorrow. And she'd ship out 8 of her Building 11 men to Freedom House, and we would pair them up with a man that had been there working, my dad. Men from his men's group would come and rub shoulders with these inmates and teach them skills on building. They were a huge part of the process. So I want to go back to this picture. This is the upper room, but we had ordered kitchen cabinets that were $6,000 through SBS. And this whole time, we have no money. It was just I would go and speak, or God would prompt someone to give at the most random times. Well, it took 6-7 weeks for them to get shipped in through SBS. And they called me 7 weeks later and said, Jen, your cabinets are ready to be picked up. They need to be paid in full when you pick up. $5,800. So I remember I was in this room, as you can see, just covered in sawdust. This was their staging room to cut all the wood, and I'm sweeping, and I look on my phone bank app and pull up our Freedom House bank account and look, and just like it always is, there was $700 in there. And they're like, they've been sitting here a week, you got to come get them. And so I'm sweeping, and I'm talking to God, and I'm just saying, Lord, I don't know how. I'm in big trouble. I ordered them on faith, and I probably shouldn't have done that because I don't have any money to pick them up. And I'm sweeping, and I get a tap on my shoulder, and a volunteer says, Jen, someone just dropped off an envelope in the break room for you. And I was like, well, who? And she said, I don't know. They just dropped it and left. And so I go down to the break room, and I open this envelope up, and there's $5,000 cash with no card, with no name. To this day, I have no idea who dropped. Could be an angel. Could have been God. Could have been a community member that God prompted, hey, they need 5Gs right now. And they went, pulled it out, dropped it off. 3 hours later, we were picking up the kitchen cabinets from SBS. And I'm telling you guys, if I had all day, I could tell you of miracle after miracle after miracle that God provided for Freedom House to be what it is today. This is the living room before, just part of the electrical problems all throughout the home. And when we would get it down to the 2x4s, I would tell the volunteers, go write your favorite Bible verse up there. My office, every 2x4 is covered in all of what I call bullet verses, all of the verses that I've memorized to shoot at the enemy when he comes to tell me that it can't happen, that this house won't open, that you're still too broken, that you're not knowledgeable enough to do this, because I'm telling you, all you need is a calling from God, and he does the rest. This is not Jenny's house. This is God's house, all the way down to the 2x4s. It is his home. So we had scheduled an open house. We put it on the radio and the newspaper. And my sister comes from downstairs, who my oldest sister, Nicole, is the assistant director of Freedom House. She is my best friend and has prayed me through my whole addiction, and now we get to do ministry together. But she comes upstairs with this look on her face and says, Jen, there is a flood in the basement. There's water coming up through our brand new flooring that we just put down. And so we go running down there, and sure enough, it's coming in the hallway. And we had never been in the building through a spring breakup before, because we purchased it in December, and this was in May, so all of the snow was melting, and what was happening was it was coming up through the foundation and flooding the basement, which has four of our bedrooms and everything brand new paint on the walls. So I'm thinking, oh no, and I call a contractor. My friend's husband owns a construction company, so I called him to at least come assess and help us, because we have an open house this weekend. We're expecting hundreds of people to come. So I'm pretty discouraged, which you would think after what I witnessed, you know, my faith would be built. And I just tell you guys that I am fully human, that I am scared, that I'm fearful, that I have every single emotion that you guys have. But the difference that I see in my life than others sometimes is the gift of faith, of stepping out, jumping off that cliff, when nothing makes sense other than the calling of God. Jumping off that cliff of faith. So I call this contractor over. He assesses it. He had never been in the building before, and he asks, hey, will you give me a tour? So we're giving him a tour around the whole facility, and we get to what we call Bob the Boiler on the left. It was a 35-year-old boiler system that we literally prayed for some days to fire, because he was heating all 5,000 square feet, and it was super old. And so when we get there, he says, are you guys going to replace this boiler system? Number one, he's telling me about the fire hazard because it had an open flame underneath and all this stuff. And I was like, well, that's not in our $500,000 budget, you know, renovations that we're working on. But eventually, yes, I would like to, because I checked into it and it was going to run about $20,000 to $21,000 to update our boiler system. And so, of course, you know, that's not even in the plan because Bob's still firing. He's still working. Well, he does the tour and he leaves, and 20 minutes later, I get a phone call. And it was the same guy, and he said, hey, I just talked to my wife. Me and my company want to buy Freedom House a brand new boiler, a $14,000 boiler. He goes, and I've also called my buddy at M&J Plumbing and Heating, and they're going to donate the $6,000 installation. And so this flood in the basement that I'm thinking, oh no, this is horrible. God takes those messes. He takes what the enemy says, see, this ain't going to work, and he turns it into something so much bigger, so much greater, if we were just obedient to follow through. And this, it also took our heating bill. We were paying almost $700 a month to NSAR just to heat the place with Bob the Boiler. And now we're running $300. I mean, it cut that bill that Freedom House will have forever almost in half. So it's a blessing that keeps on giving, too. Every bed was made by my friend out in Sterling, her and her kiddos handmade the beds. They turned out beautiful. Now these are going to be the after pictures. The kitchen, we have granite countertops throughout the whole home, standing for granite, donated. Every bathroom countertop, every kitchen countertop, we paid for materials. And that's how we paid for labor. A lot of this was donated materials. Sherwin-Williams donated over $5,000 worth of paint SBS gave us a pretty good deal on all of our supplies. It took, I'm telling you, a whole community stood behind this vision. This is the living room. Now a church out of Anchorage bought us brand new. They called and said, hey, the women's retreat took a love offering, $2,000 to Sadler's. Go pick out what furniture you want. So we got to go pick out the furniture. This is that moldy bathroom that you've seen. I'm telling you guys that this home, that the word on the street that it's too broken, that it's too messy, that it's too dirty, that it can't be fixed. And God took it and turned it into a five-star home for his princesses that are coming off the streets, that are broken. They're coming in broken. This home is better than anything most of them have ever lived in. And they get to come in and they get to heal and they get to grow and they get to find love in this home. This is the intake office. As we're building, the chief of the hospital security stopped in and said, hey, I work over at the hospital. What are you going to do for security here at the house? You know, I haven't got that far. We're still building, painting. Things were happening so quick, I don't even know. We got locks on the door. We're going to do that. He said, well, me and my wife want to buy a security system for your home. And me and my teenage son are going to come. And they came and they installed every camera. They bought and purchased. We don't ever see a bill for it. Every single that my TV they mounted and put up for us, because safety and security is my number one thing at Freedom House. We are dealing with a population that have people like myself when I got out of it that might be looking for them. Ex-boyfriends or husbands, and so security we take very serious at Freedom House. On every bed, we do welcome bags, journals, blow dryers. A Soldotna church kind of took this piece on. Their women's ministry for the first 6 months took that on and would supply toothbrush, toothpaste, razors, hair ties, deodorants, and put them in these welcome bags. These stuffed animals, you'd be surprised when a lady came and said, hey, I've got these two black garbage bags. They're all basically brand new stuffed animals. Do you want them? And I was thinking, nah, probably not, but okay, basically one of those decisions. So I put them on all the beds when the girls come in, these ladies come in, and we've had so far an 18-year-old, and then our oldest so far has been 60 years old, so we've got the whole range of women that have come to Freedom House, but you would be surprised that these stuffed animals are such a huge part to their healing. They'll bring them up to devotions. They'll carry them around the house with them. A lot of them will give them to their children that they no longer have custody of, so it's a gift they can give out. Each piece, each part of this home has been such a blessing to see God use. Every blanket was made by College Heights Baptist Quilting Club, so when a girl successfully transitions out of Freedom House, they get to take their own personal quilt that they moved in with, which has been also a huge blessing. The girls are very jealous over their quilts, so I love that. And so they also, another quilting club out Funny River, jumped on board. We actually have three quilting clubs. My closet right now is full of quilts. Like, we are going to be good for a while, because that's something that they can do to help. And the women love their quilts that they get to take to their new home or their new apartment with them. I get a call when we were getting ready to open. What are you going to do for your appliances, washer, dryer, stove, refrigerator, all that stuff? And I was thinking, when it got to that time, I'd look on the buy, sell, trade page on Facebook and there's some nice stuff that you can get off there. So I was telling her, I don't really have a plan. As soon as we get close enough, and again, she said, well, me and my husband called Dan's TV Appliance in Kenai, and we put $6,000 with your name on it. Go pick out what you want. So we got to walk in, and that provided the stove, the refrigerator, the dishwasher, brand new washer and dryer. Like, I'm telling you guys, the miracles that God did day after day. Still, I stand up here, and like me and my husband were talking about, you know, we've been probably to 25 to 30 churches now, from Homer all the way to Moose Pass and everywhere in between. And it still just blows me away that what I get to tell you. My son said last night, that's my favorite story, when he heard we're going to be sharing about Freedom House. Yes, that's my favorite story, because the miracles abound, and God is showing that he is alive and active and hears and cares about the lost and the broken. Here's our upper room. We do a chapel every Tuesday night. We do a big dinner, and this is a part of volunteering for those of you that like to cook. You can bring a partner with you, but a volunteer every Tuesday comes in. They bring their own ingredients to the food. Like if they're making lasagna, they'll bring all of those ingredients to our kitchen, and we assign a resident that's living there with you, and they help you cook and prepare the meal, because once a week, every Tuesday night, that's the only meal that we provide. Everyone living there comes, volunteers in the community come, and we have a speaker and live worship every Tuesday night with our dinner. And so if you guys want to help, or if any of you lead worship and you want to come play, or if you have a testimony, every Tuesday night from the beginning, we've been open just over a year. So May 1st, we celebrated 1 year. And let me tell you that part of the story. When December, we signed, and the inspector said it can't be done, it's impossible. And he even wrote on the permit saying it probably take 3 to 5 years is the estimated date. April 28th, that same inspector, just 4 months later, was standing in our kitchen with the permit of occupancy, with tears in his eyes, saying, I cannot believe what I just witnessed. I cannot believe. He was there every week, and he would be silent. He wouldn't say anything. And he just walked through, and we would never know if he's going to shut us down or what. Never did. And he said, I can't believe what I just witnessed. And I said, our God is a big, big God. And he were operating on a provisional permit. In 4.5 months, we completed $400,000 worth of renovations, paid for, out the door. We opened the doors 4 months after we signed on that dotted line. Fear can be big and fear can be ugly, but fear is a liar. If you've heard that song, you'll sing it loud with me, that fear from the enemy is a liar. That if we step through it, God, and give God the opportunity to be big and to be God, he will blow our socks off every time. The front porch, this front yard, being in the city, we had to put these $1,200 trees in, so that's why they're on my slideshow, because they are very expensive, and we legally had to have 5 trees, you know, a certain many feet apart. But I do have to say, the city has been amazing to work with. They have encouraged, and they're just doing their job. You know, some of the things that people were like, well, we are going to honor and respect them because they are helping us. And so these trees were planted. So this was our thermometer. Pretty sketchy, but I need to update the slideshow. So we have about less than $20,000 to go of our $459,000 of everything. And that includes, so basically all that's left is our roof needs, not completely redone, but it needs some work. And we need our wheelchair ramps. They need to have tow guards and handrails and some metal work. As well, so we don't have that much left. We're renovating upstairs, which I don't think I have that on there. Upstairs, we have 1,000 square feet that we were going to turn into commercial office rentals. That way, because we have no monthly income. Let me tell you guys too, that $400,000 that was completed has been done with. We have not received a penny from a grant, government. I mean, we've applied. And I've got down to the point where there was a $50,000. We had made it through every hoop of their thing. They were going to give us $50,000. And the lady called me and said, Jen, I see that it's faith-based, which is fine. We support some faith-based, but can you change the wording in your policies and procedures that the girls aren't required to go to church? Or that the girls aren't required to do devotions? Or they're not required to go to chapel? She's like, they'll probably all still go. But my spirit said no, because this is not my house. This is God's house, and he made it very clear how the programming and everything. I traveled around the state of Alaska before I even opened this. I went to faith-based homes that were already working, that had been open for years. I went and got a stay at Haven House in Juneau. I went up to New Horizons in Anchorage, to the Hope House in Anchorage, Valley Oaks in Palmer, because I didn't want to reinvent it. I wanted to see what was working in Alaska and bring it back to Soldotna and just tweak it a little bit how God was telling me. That's another reason why I didn't go under the umbrella of an organization that's out there, is because God was leading very clearly on how to do this and how to run it. So that wing upstairs that was going to be commercial office rentals, we've now turned into, God's given me a different vision. We've been open a year, and to see these women transform, and in just a year we've had 27 intakes, 27 women. We have 6 beds at a time, but we've had 27 come through the doors. We have had 6 dismissals because we have a zero tolerance policy for drugs and alcohol. We have curfew. We have, you know, it's a pretty strict programming to live there. And out of the 6 dismissals that we've had, 3 of those women have now found their way back through the doors because they see that we haven't abandoned them. We're not giving up hope on them, that there is still hope and freedom. I'm going to wrap up here shortly. So this is our Tuesday night chapel dinner. These are some of our ladies, another Tuesday night chapel. I really encourage you guys, if you can, get a hold of me, and we'll get you on the list to come and see what God does on Tuesday nights. This is our very first graduate. She has traveled around with me to a few churches. Couldn't be here this morning, but she came to us 5 months pregnant. Her drug of choice was meth. Mainly the drugs around here, IV heroin and meth use, is about 99% of what we're seeing locally in our backyards here on the peninsula. But she came and she was living in her van. So she even admits now, part of her testimony is, I knew Freedom House was faith-based, but I didn't care. I just didn't have any other choice. I was just going to go in and basically fake it till I make it, right? Well, she came, moved in, and met Jesus. She came and moved in. This is a mother of 5. She has 5 kiddos that the state had taken custody from. Pregnant with this one, the doctors had found water pockets on the baby's brain and said it might not make it through delivery. And I still remember the weeping for 3 days that this girl cried and wailed. And we just prayed and we prayed, and we would lay hands on that belly and we'd pray for that baby. And 3 days later, when she had her follow-up appointment with the local doctor, she came home, and I remember her getting dropped off by a cab, and she came in, and she was, what I would say, screaming, and I thought, oh no, it's not good. But she was screaming, Jesus healed my baby! Jesus healed my baby! And she got to witness the miracle of healing in Freedom House and had a healthy baby, Andrew, in September of last year. He's about 6 months old now. She's now living back home with all 5 of her kids in full custody. She is a miracle. And she comes back and she tells the story that I was just coming in, not having any clue that I was going to have an encounter with the living God. This girl on the left, I've only got a few of these stories, but I'm telling you, out of the over 30 that we've seen now, we've been open over a year now, but they all have such a story, such a broken story. This girl's life started out as being dropped off at a garbage can at a Walmart when she was 8 months old by her mother, who didn't want her, who discarded her as trash, as garbage, and by the age of 11 was addicted to heroin. These are her 3 kids that the state had custody of. She lived with us for almost 6 months. She's now been out since December. She has a full-time job. She just got full custody back of her 3 kiddos. She went from broken. It's a journey. It's not like a magical wand, but she is being healed and has been healed from her past, from what the devil says, I've come to kill, steal, and destroy. But God has come to give life and to give it abundantly. This is my last slide. These are actually, baby Mason's in the back today with our downstairs, but our girl on the right, Mandy, and her son, Mason, and our girl on the left, Cherie. Cherie was our very first resident. She's back with us, getting ready to graduate. Mandy's our senior resident. She's been there the longest. They've both been there almost 8 months. They can live with us up to 9 months. We can tweak it a little bit, but they know that coming in because we are a transitional, long-term recovery transitional home. We don't want them to get too comfortable. This is just the transition and 9 months to get on your feet, to get the fog to clear, and to get you back out into our community. And so they're both getting ready to graduate, but Mandy's story I'm going to end with. She came to us the beginning of December, snotting, crying, hopeless. A gentleman had brought her, and he called me. He knew me, and he said, I've got a girl I'm bringing to you. Okay, bring her to my office. We were full. All of our beds were full at the time, but I'll still talk and pray with her. And she comes in, and the stench of vodka was so strong that I had to scoot my chair back across my desk because it was literally making me sick. And through her tears, she tells me, Jen, I had a year clean. I went and I bought 2/5 of vodka at the Walmart liquor store and chugged them in the parking lot. Put my baby in the car, and then I was heading up to Wasilla to get dope because of what she had discovered. Life happened. She walked in on something horrible and said, forget it. Gets wasted and was heading up to the valley where she's from to get some dope. She gets pulled over by Girdwood, gets arrested, transported back down here to Wildwood. They take the baby. She gets only released after 12 hours of being in Wildwood because it's her first offense. She's still drunk, a blood alcohol level of being wasted when she goes home straight from Wildwood. A cab drops her off at home. She walks in her house and grabs a loaded gun and is going to end her life because now she doesn't even have her kid. She knows she doesn't have her sobriety. She didn't know Jesus. And her phone rings as she's got the gun up to her mouth. And it's this gentleman in Homer that she hadn't talked to in 3 years that God nudged that said, hey, remember Mandy? Why don't you give her a call right now? He calls her, hey, Mandy, what's up? She said, do you really want to know? And he said, yeah. And so she tells him and he says, hold on, I'm going to be there in 45 minutes. And he drives from Homer to Kenai. He says, I've got somewhere I can take you. I know someone that can talk to you. Don't do it, I'll be there. And he rushes to Kenai, gets her, comes straight to my office. And so she's telling me the story with the vodka. And she said, Jenny, all I want to know is there hope for me? And I was able to look her, grab her cheeks, and look her square in the eye and say, yes, there is hope. Our bracelets say, there is freedom. His name is Jesus. And we got to move her in that next morning. They have to pass a clean drug or alcohol test. So she was, one of our staff went over and sat with her at her home that night. And because she could blow me a clean breathalyzer that morning, we moved her in to Freedom House. She's been there ever since. Court has given her, because she's living at Freedom House, she gets her baby Mason 4 days a week. She just got a job. That's why Gail's got baby today, but she's working full-time. She graduated parenting classes. She's just about to graduate treatment through Kenaitse. But we get to watch. This is three stories, guys, of what I'm telling you, the miracle that's happening. And so I'm going to invite Pastor back up. I know that we're going to close with prayer, but if I can pray with anyone today, even if it's a dream, to dust off a vision that God has given you and you have quieted or silenced it, or let the enemy's voice be louder than the voice of truth that says with God all things are possible. If you have a loved one struggling addiction, if you are struggling with something, I know the power of prayer works. So thanks for having me, Pastor. Tuesdays. We changed it, so yes.
Oh, yeah, I got that off the website. It's
Tuesday night.
It's Tuesday night. It's okay. So, I don't know where Jeremiah went. Oh, there you are.